Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Council, before we begin, I'm going to first introduce some students who are here, if I might. We have students from Rufus King, and I was corrected the last time, IB High School. And would they please stand? Good seeing you, and I want to thank you all for coming. You may be seated. And we have students from Richard School District. Would they stand, please? Thank you, and you may be seated. The students are here with us today with the Court with Class program that the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the State Bar of Wisconsin have run since, for a lot of years. And this program has won national awards. And what the program involves is the students from all over the state are invited to appear at an oral argument. And if the invitation is accepted, the students get briefs of the oral argument and may use other materials and perhaps invite people in to discuss the case with them. And then they come to oral argument, and then the students will meet with a justice at noon. And today we're going to have students from Rufus King Heritage Christian School and students from Florence High School who are going to come in for the 1:45 oral argument. So students, it's going to be a little crowded in this courtroom at noon when you hear the presentation by Justice Prosser. Everyone is cordially invited to attend the noon session. The subject will be the procedures of the court, not the substance of the cases that we are hearing today. So I've talked about the court with class, and we've met the students. Now let me introduce the court to you. Starting on my far right is Justice Diane Sykes. Seated next to her is Justice Patrick Crooks. To my immediate right is Justice John Wilcox. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, and to her left, Justice Prosser, who will meet with you at noon. And on the far left is Justice Patience Rogensack. With these introductions made, I'll now call my second case, 02-2002, Michael Steitzinger versus Community Health Network. Counsel?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, my colleagues from the State Bar, Richard Rice from Fox & Fox. As the court is aware, the oral argument will be presented by Nicholas Cater, who I now introduce to the court, who is appearing by his application pro ac vice.
Thank you, Attorney Rice. Attorney Cater, you are authorized to appear solely on this case in this court on pro ac vice.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You are an attorney from New Jersey.
Yes, Your Honor, and I thank the court for the privilege of appearing on behalf of my client in this beautiful courtroom. My name is Nicholas Carter, and I represent Dr. Michael Steitzinger, the plaintiff appellant in this case. And we are asking the court to hold that the representation of a physician at a hospital peer review hearing, which is generally referred to as a fair hearing, is not the practice of law. And even if it is the practice of law, to hold that it is not the unauthorized practice of law for certain individuals not licensed to practice law in Wisconsin to engage in the activity. And we do so for the following reasons. First, out-of-state counsel and physicians have represented parties at a hospital fair hearing for years. The practice has served the interest of the parties well and has created no apparent problems. Second, A fair hearing is a forum for professional evaluation, and it is not a legal proceeding. It is not governed by the rules of evidence or civil or appellate procedure. And the decision of a fair hearing panel is not a final decision. It doesn't bind the hospital. It doesn't create any new rights or obligations or relationships. And it's not reviewable by a court. And finally, we contended to restrict the activity would not further any identifiable public purpose or interest and would simply deny a party the right to the counsel of his choice in a matter of very grave importance to him professionally.
Counselor, if there were a breach of the provisions of the bylaws during the course of the hearing and the doctor's privileges were adversely affected at the end of the hearing, are you telling me that you wouldn't have that reviewed by a court of law as a breach of contract action against the hospital?
The substantive merits of a hospital peer review hearing is not reviewable by a court. It says Wisconsin, and that's true for any state.
No, but that wasn't my question. That wasn't my question at all. My question was, if there were procedures that occurred during the course of the hearing that were contrary to the provisions for such a hearing in the bylaws which govern that hearing, and at the end of the hearing your client's rights were affected adversely, would you not sue the court for breach of contract? That was the question.
The court will review the
hospital. Sorry.
Yeah, the court will review the procedures for fundamental fairness. That is all. And
contractual rights there in that bylaws agreement between the doctor and the bylaws?
Well, the court has, Wisconsin has held that the bylaws are a hospital, and for sure, if the hospital refused to allow, for example, Dr. Seitzinger to cross-examine a witness, that would be a violation of the bylaws, and it wouldn't be fair procedure, and he would have a cause of action for breach of contract. That's correct.
That was my question. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay. Well, I think the facts and the procedural history of this case is so straightforward that with a court's permission, I will skip over it.
Let's just look at this for a minute. This contract says what? It says that the doctor can appear with a physician who is a member of this group, right?
Well, it's not actually the bylaws are construed as a constructive contract. There is a provision for fair hearings within the bylaws that spell out what are the physician's rights.
All right. Under the general rubric of fair hearing is what you keep saying.
Yes.
All right. So what are his rights?
Well, his rights are to be represented by a physician on staff at the hospital.
Okay.
And to be represented by an attorney.
Or
one or the other.
One or the other. Or
his rights are, he has a right to call witnesses, to cross-examine witnesses, to introduce documents into evidence. And at the end of the proceeding, he has a right to make a written statement. But there is no subpoena power or coercive power to force a witness to appear.
So if he were you are a physician, right?
I am, Your Honor.
But not on this staff?
No, Your Honor.
So you don't fit under Category 1?
Not on Category 1, no.
And you are also a licensed attorney?
Yes, Your Honor.
But not in the state of Wisconsin?
Yes, Your Honor.
And no court licensed you for this proceeding?
Well, Your Honor, there is no provision to do that. We did apply to the circuit court that if it did find that it was the practice of law, for me to be admitted pro hac vice, but the court said that it had no such authority.
Okay. So you appeared with Dr. Seitzinger, right?
I appeared. No, Your Honor, that he retained. What happened was, Your Honor, is he asked to retain me, and then when the hospital then took the position that I could only represent him in conjunction with local counsel.
So if you were going to appear, you'd have to get in under the attorney provision.
Well, Your Honor, we contend that this is not the practice of law. This is
I understand that.
Oh.
But if the contract is they're represented by staff physician.
Yes.
Or attorney.
Yes.
You either have to come under A or B.
Yes, under B, Your Honor.
You come under B's attorney.
Yes.
And you're arguing attorney means any lawyer anywhere in the country.
Correct.
Doesn't have to be a Wisconsin lawyer because Correct. You're not practicing law.
Correct.
And the contract is silent as to whether you have to be a licensed attorney in Wisconsin. It just says attorney.
That's correct.
And the hospital wants to construe this to mean Wisconsin lawyer.
Yes, Your Honor.
So it's a contract basis on the one hand. And the second prong of the argument is, if I understand this, the second prong is that contract shouldn't be so construed, and you don't have to be a licensed Wisconsin lawyer because it is not the practice of law.
Yes, I mean, I didn't construe this as a contract argument, but the contract argument can be dispensed with very simply because, first of all, there's no ambiguity in the term, and a party cannot create an ambiguity by so saying, number one. Number two, a contract is construed against the drafter of the contract, any ambiguity is. And, of course, it's the hospital that drafted the bylaws. And so if there's any ambiguity whether an attorney means what it means, then it will be construed against the hospital, and it cannot be, one cannot take a simple term like that and I believe, under existing contract law, adopt the hospital's position. But I think this case, if I may go on, Your Honor, is really squarely governed by the court's decision in State versus Dinger, although, of course, the subject matter is completely different. That was the real estate broker case. And the court the court has repeatedly said that it will decide what is and what is not the practice of law on a case-by-case basis. And although it hasn't formulated a specific test, in State versus Dinger it said that the court is duty-bound to use common sense when restricting the practice of law to ensure that the public benefit is, that the public interest is benefited rather than unnecessarily burdened, however justified the restriction may be from the standpoint of pure logic. And the court there was quoting the Minnesota Supreme Court, but these sentiments have been expressed by other state Supreme Courts, notably the Florida and New Jersey Supreme Courts. And of course these words echo the famous aphorism of Justice Holmes, that the life of the law has not been logic, it has been experience. And it is to experience that the court looked in Dinger to decide whether or not real estate brokers should be permitted to transfer real property using standardized forms, and it is to experience that we ask the court to look to decide this case. What the
so
court?
Why did your client hire you if not for legal advice?
Because I contend that it's because of my medical expertise, Your Honor.
So you were there to see if the same types of standard of care that had been used as inadequate as weighed against other members of the medical staff were then weighed against what was being addressed by these hearings in regard to your client?
Well, the standard isn't quite that. It's whether there is a substantial factual basis for the hospital's position. And these involve numerous cases and wide areas of medicine. And it's really medical expertise and the ability to marshal medical evidence and argue medical evidence and nothing to do with law that will enable a party to prevail. And I think that's why Dr. Seitzinger retained me, because I specialize in the same field as he, and I have subspecialty interest in the issues that were germane or at issue at the fair hearing.
You know, I agree with you that we have to decide whether this is the practice of law on a case-by-case basis. And I guess what troubles me are some of the things that we have reviewed so far, and I have to tell you I haven't read the entire record, so I won't pretend that I have. But there are places where there are statements attributed to you where you are definitely giving legal advice about things like time limits, which has nothing to do with the medical standard of care.
And I guess I'd like to know how you say that's not the practice of law, or you see it as not being the practice of law in this case.
Well, if that were true, Your Honor, then that might be the practice of law, but that is a misstatement of the facts, and it's being fully briefed. A physician doesn't even have to retain a lawyer to be appraised of his rights, because the hospital under state law is required to inform the physician about his rights under the bylaws, including the timeline.
Sure, I understand that.
So I want to talk about
what happened here, though. I want to talk about what you did here on behalf of your client, and one of the things you said that you did was to advise him of medical standards for the kinds of matters that were under review. And my question back to you was, well, I can understand that being something that's not the practice of law, but then what about questions that you had about asserting your client's right in correspondence? You're saying that that's not accurate. There was never any correspondence where you ever asserted your client's legal rights.
Well, he has rights under the bylaws and the procedures, but those procedures, the hospital had already told us what the rights were.
Well, that's not my question, though. My question is, what did you do? Because we have to look at your conduct. Your conduct we're trying to decide is the practice of the law or is not the practice of the law.
To be perfectly honest, Your Honor, I can't remember everything that I did, but most of the correspondence informed medical matters. For example, the hospital did not inform Dr. Seitzinger of why he took the action and or what cases the actions were based on. It's not a question of timeline. The hospital gave him 24 hours notice or 36 hours notice for a hearing, and then when he asked to cancel a meeting because he had an appointment in Madison, the hospital would say the meeting will go on without or without him. So these are the kind of dialogue that went on. It wasn't anything to do with the practice of law.
Well, you don't think interpreting the bylaws it has anything to do with the practice of law? You think that's a purely medical decision?
Well, I don't think it's a medical decision. First of all, we don't interpret the bylaws. What happens is an adverse action is taken against the physician, and the hospital writes him a letter and says, look, these are your rights. This is what you must do. And in fact, as we said in our brief, counsel is not allowed to make the appeal or the request for a fair hearing for the physician. The physician must do it himself, either in person or by certified letter. So the question is, it's really, we're told what our rights are. And it never got to the point of whether the hospital abided by those its requirements. So there was no question of
his telling me that they didn't advise him correctly of what his rights were under the bylaws. Isn't that what you just told me?
No, Your Honor. No, there was no discussion of what there is no talking about this case as opposed to the general. In this case, it never got that far, because the entire proceedings got bogged down into whether or not I was permitted to represent him under Wisconsin law, and the hospital constantly changed its position. First, it told Dr. Seitzinger to retain local counsel. After he retained local counsel, he said, well, you still can't represent him. So he never got that far. But as a general proposition, no legal knowledge, no legal skills are required to represent a physician at a fair hearing, and the very fact that the hospital bylaws authorize other physicians to represent physicians and to preside over fair hearings is, as I contend, evidence of that.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I can see where you get that, when a physician can represent another physician, so long as the representing physician is a member of the hospital staff. But just because legal skills are not required at a fair hearing does not mean when one selects an attorney that one is not getting legal representation, correct? The two are separate questions.
They are. If Your Honor is saying that even though the representation in question does not require the rendering of legal advice, one may pari passu, so to speak, give legal advice nonetheless, and that's certainly true. But in that case, the holding of the court should be that out-of-state counsel can represent physicians at fair hearings so long as they don't advise the physician about substantive Wisconsin law. And that's exactly the kind of limitation that the court placed on Keller. Keller was a layman licensed to practice in front of the Interstate Commerce Commission, and the court was couldn't enjoin him from advising clients about their rights under federal law. But the court said, look, you can tell your clients whether certain contracts or leases which have to be approved by the Interstate Commerce Commission satisfies the requirements of federal law, but you may not draft those leases or contracts because those leases and contracts create substantive rights and obligations, and that's outside the scope of what you may do. So as a general proposition, I think Your Honor is correct. An attorney representing a physician at a fair hearing could simultaneously, incidental to that representation, give legal advice, and he shouldn't. And the two are not necessarily linked. And whether or not a physician should be authorized, or permitted rather, to represent a physician at a fair hearing is a separate question and cannot be determined by the fact that he may exceed the scope of his the grant of authority and advise the physician, which he would be ill-advised to do.
Counselor, if you were not an MD and you were just, you had a JD or whatever your legal graduate training degree is in, do you think that your client would have hired you?
Well, I don't know, Your Honor. All I can tell Your Honor is that there are firms, such as the Hortish Springer firm in Pittsburgh, who specialize in credentialing matters. They are frequently called...
Just finish. If he had hired you, just say he did.
Okay.
Hired you anyway because you had lots of training in this kind of an action.
Right.
Do you think you could appear at the fair hearing?
Absolutely. And I think such representation goes on in Wisconsin all the time, not only on behalf of physicians, but before... But on behalf of hospitals as well. In fact, there's not one iota of evidence that anybody prior to the defendants here has ever construed this representation to be the practice of law, and they have organized their affairs accordingly so that all hospital bylaws, I think, with few exceptions, have a provision to allow physicians to represent other physicians, and firms like Hortish Springer represent physicians and more commonly hospitals out of state all the time. And I think that returning to the Dinger case, the court decided to allow real estate brokers to transfer real property using standardized forms, precisely because the activity had gone on for years and it had appeared to work well. And if what Dinger stands for is that common sense requires that the court not disturb settled expectations and settled practices, then most surely it should allow out-of-state physicians, out-of-state attorneys and physicians to represent physicians and indeed medical staff or the opposing party at fair hearings, because it has gone on for years. It has served the interests of the parties well, and it has created no problems because no cases have come before the courts requesting that such activity be restrained as the unauthorized practice of law.
Counsel, isn't this particular case moot? It's my understanding that your client has been suspended by the medical examining board for 5 years, that there's been a revocation of his privileges by the Community Health Network. Why should we be deciding this issue?
Well, as we brief the matter, first of all, I don't think that action was taken on partly on events that occurred after this, number one. And number two, whatever all that may be true, but surely a finding that his privileges were suspended unjustifiably is something of interest to him professionally, regardless of whatever may have happened afterwards. That's the first thing. Second thing is that this is a case that's capable of being repeated. In fact, it has repeated itself, because one of the expert witnesses we retained in this case, one of his residents was suspended by the hospital, also represented by the hospital council, and he retained me, and that has been placed on hold pending this court's decision.
Where is it placed on hold? At the Court of Appeals?
No, in the hospital. Now, Your Honor, if I may finally say that the representation is not only not governed by the rules of evidence, No legal skills or knowledge is required. And I would point out that the hospital's own bylaws describe the hearing as a forum for professional evaluation and discussion and not judicial inform. And it goes so far as to authorize the hearing panel to limit the active involvement of counsel in the proceedings. And I contend, at least we know of no legal proceedings known to American jurisprudence in which the participation of counsel can be limited. Indeed, our adversarial system and our rules of professional responsibility require zealous representation so that the merits of an argument can be adequately argued by those most affected by the outcome of the decision.
But could I ask you a question that's troubling me? Why is it that you are able to argue a case before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, but you cannot argue a case in a fair hearing in Berlin?
Precisely, Your Honor. Precisely, Your Honor. That is the nub of it. And we would say that ultimately it's a balancing test of the competing interest. So really, this physician's, we're talking generally, and this court's decision will affect other litigants.
That's a different question, though, than whether you were or would have been practicing law, isn't it?
It can be or cannot be. It's certainly irrelevant to the decision because in the final analysis, the court is required to balance, we contend, the competing interests. Would the public be furthered, the public interest be furthered by restricting the practice? Or would it be harmed by restricting the practice? And all that this would accomplish is that physicians, in a matter of vital importance to them professionally, will be restricted in whom they could retain to represent them. And I can tell this court that physicians in other states have liberally retained both attorneys and physicians to represent them.
Well, let me ask this. Let's suppose this young lady right at the end of the first row here were the most eminent gynecologist in New Jersey.
Right.
And Dr. Seitzinger wanted her to come. What would be the result there?
Well, the result there, that's a contractual matter, because the hospital has said that the physician can only be represented by physicians on staff of the hospital. Now, I contend, unfortunately, these are sort of adhesion contracts. If the physician said, look, wait a minute, we want to have the right to be represented by any physician anywhere, then I think that would be permitted. So as a matter of policy, as a matter of law, yes, I think she should be able to represent Dr. Seitzinger. But it couldn't in this case, because the bylaws limit representation by physicians to physicians who are on staff at the hospital.
Well, if that's true, then you really do have to go under B, and B calls for an attorney.
Correct.
But is it your argument that even though you're under B and you are an attorney, you're not practicing law?
Correct, Your Honor. Our position is that not everything an attorney does is the practice of law. That's correct. And we cited in our brief, for example, arbitration proceedings. I'm familiar that this court has not decided whether those are the practice of law, but many states have decided that arbitration is not. And one of the reasons is the point Your Honor made, because in courts of law, one can balance the interest in regulating the profession and recognizing the right of parties to choose their counsel through the pro hac vice provision. And no such provision my time's up.
No, you may finish your sentence, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. No such provision exists in arbitration proceedings and at fair hearings at hospitals.
Now, I have a question for you, and I'm going to ask this of Attorney Kramer, who is appearing from, Kramer, but I will ask it of Attorney Greer, who is appearing for Community Health Network. If you were a staff physician,
yes, sir,
Could you call witnesses?
Yes.
Could you cross-examine witnesses?
Yes.
Could you introduce documents?
Yes.
Could you make a statement on behalf of the doctor?
Yes.
Well, and you were going to do all this as an attorney?
Yes.
Well, if the allegation is that you're doing all of this as an attorney, then why isn't the staff physician practicing law?
Well, this is exactly the point that we made in our brief, Your Honor, that the hospital could never have believed that this was the practice of law, because if it did, it essentially introduced, if it's the unauthorized practice of law for an out-of-state attorney to engage in the activity, then it's obviously the unauthorized practice of law for a staff physician to engage in the activity, because it's not staff membership but licensure by the Wisconsin Bar that determines whether you can practice or not. And that's exactly the point, Your Honor. And all the arguments of the defendants, that all how it might be injured by the incompetent representation of a physician, of an attorney from New Jersey, not familiar with Wisconsin law, applies a fortiori, I would contend, to physicians. And yet the hospital allows physicians to do all those things. It allows physicians to preside over those hearings. And it describes those hearings as a professional, as a forum for professional evaluation. Your Honor, this has never been. It doesn't, as the cliche goes, it doesn't talk like law, it doesn't walk like law, it doesn't quack like law, and it's never been construed anywhere at any time to be a legal proceedings or the representation to be the practice of law.
But you would concede, I think, having both a medical degree and a law degree, and having your law background makes you a very much more potentially dangerous opponent to the hospital than someone who's just a lawyer or just a doctor.
Maybe so, Your Honor, but
it's a good idea to consider.
It's not for me to say that, but I believe that is why clients represent me. But I would note, if I'm permitted to, that the Indiana Supreme Court said that just because a proceeding is adversarial and just because legal skills may be beneficial, that is not the dispositive test of whether an activity is the practice of law. Thank you, Your Honor.
Are there any other questions? Well, thank you. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Greer, James W. Greer, Jr., Whitehurstbeck Dudek, representing Community Health Network. Counsel?
May it please the Court, I represent the Community Health Network and Berlin Memorial Hospital. My co-counsel, Dennis Bertel, is at my left. I'd like to start a little bit with a bit of the facts in this case, because we've kind of jumped right into it. This case started in May of 2001 with the summary suspension of Dr. Seitzinger based on six cases which he had handled. The hospital concluded preliminarily that he was a danger to patients and therefore summarily suspended his privileges. Shortly thereafter, Dr. Seitzinger retained Attorney Kadar. He didn't retain him as a doctor. He retained him as an attorney. His admission pro hoc vici in this case established that he was retained in May of 2001. And thereafter, he purported to provide legal services to Dr. Seitzinger throughout this entire process, and he continues to do this to this day to be doing that.
How do you know that he's performing legal services? Now, you know, it's easy here. It's he's in court. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say when you come to court you're not doing legal services, right? That's an easy one.
Right.
But most of your life, if you're like I was and most lawyers, you're not in court. You're sitting at a desk, you're sitting in a library, you're on the telephone, you're at your computer or with a pencil and yellow pad. And sometimes you look very much like other people.
Your Honor.
Sometimes you don't, but sometimes you do.
Your Honor, you could show up at a PTA meeting and provide legal advice to a client.
Listen, I've shown up at PTA meetings and thought that some of the people that spoke who didn't have law degrees and gave their opinions made better sense than some of the lawyers for both the school board and teachers' unions, but that doesn't mean that they're giving legal advice of practicing law.
A person holds himself out as a lawyer, who's retained as a lawyer, and who advises a client with respect to their rights and obligations, whether under this contract, whether under the law, is providing legal services. Now, there may be certain discrete tasks, as this Court has recognized, in the real estate broker situation, insurance adjusters, where within narrow tasks, we're going to say, okay, lay people over the years have performed these tasks, and we're going to carve out an exception for this type of practice. But that's different than the situation that we have in this case. Attorney Kadar wants a license to practice nationally, is what he wants. He wants to be able to come in to states and basically represent them with what are fundamentally local disputes.
Then why do you let the doctor, staff physician, represent Dr. Seitzinger?
The staff physician does not appear as legal counsel. He is not legal counsel. There are two categories of persons that can appear, and they're not an either-or, Your Honor. He can have both. It's not an either-or. And so a doctor could have someone on the medical staff appear for him, and he could also retain legal counsel. Obviously, a physician is not going to be providing legal advice. He's not trained to provide legal advice.
But doesn't he do the same thing that an attorney can do? He can call witnesses, right?
Right. He can do those.
Examine.
Correct.
He can introduce documents.
Correct.
He can make statements.
Yes.
Which Attorney Kadar or Dr. Kadar, whichever you prefer, can
correct.
Do. Right?
Right. And Dr. Kadar, though, can also provide legal rights, legal advice with respect to the rights and obligations of that physician as well.
But not in this proceeding.
He may. At the proceeding, there will be decisions. He can advise him on whether it's strategically a good thing to testify, to not testify. There will be witnesses that will be...
Does staff physician do that? I don't think you ought to take the stand. You always look as if you're lying. You fidget. You play with your glasses.
True, but, Your Honor, if you were a physician that was being disciplined, if you wanted legal advice, you would hire an attorney, not a physician, or you would hire both, as well as expert witnesses on the professional side of it.
Could I ask you a question?
Yes.
You're familiar with Kenneth Starr.
Yes.
Suppose Dr. Seitzinger wanted to hire Kenneth Starr
correct.
As his attorney under sub B.
Correct.
How would you have reacted?
Is Kenneth Starr licensed to practice in Wisconsin?
No.
Okay. Then we would say the same thing to him that we said to Dr. Seitzinger's counsel, is that if you associate with Wisconsin counsel, you may appear at this hearing. And I should clarify for the record, there have been statements made that we've flip-flopped on this position. It is not true. If you look at the record, we have consistently maintained that Dr. Seitzinger may appear at this hearing with his New Jersey counsel as long as he associates with Wisconsin counsel. We did that as an accommodation to him. The bylaws do not – we could have taken a position in the contract that you have to be licensed in Wisconsin, period. Attorney Kadar cannot appear. We didn't do that. We said we want someone that's accountable to the disciplinary rules of the state. We want someone that's licensed to the state at a bare minimum to be there. And so we advised him, get yourself a Wisconsin lawyer. You can appear, and we'll go through the hearing process. His reaction to that was to file this lawsuit. And, in fact, he alleges in his complaint that he was afforded the opportunity to have his New Jersey counsel present. And he still, if this court affirms the trial court and its decision, then, and this goes back to where it is right now, the hearing on his suspension of his privileges has been adjourned at his insistence indefinitely. If Dr. Seitzinger requests a hearing on that summary suspension, it will be afforded to him. If this court affirms the trial court, Attorney Kadar may appear at that hearing as long as he associates with Wisconsin counsel.
Counsel?
Yeah.
One of my concerns is whether or not we are blending and confusing the difference between the label of who you are, I have a law degree, I'm a lawyer, and what you do.
Mm-hmm.
I think an argument can be made that the hospital should be criminally charged. And the hospital should be criminally charged for aiding and abetting the unauthorized practice of law. And that is because I want to look at what are the functions of law, a person practicing law. And I think the functions, arguably, of a person practicing law is, I represent Justice Prosser at this fair hearing, and I'm going to call witnesses to testify on his behalf. And I'm going to cross-examine witnesses called to testify against him. And I'm going to make a closing argument. And I'm going to make an opening statement. Mm-hmm. And that's what the hospital allows a staff physician to do. So why isn't it's criminal charge of unauthorized practice of law. Why isn't the hospital charged for aiding and abetting that?
Because the physician is not appearing as a lawyer.
But he's see, that's my concern. It seems that there's a confabulation here. What does the record show? Is the record adequate, I guess, is in the back of my mind. What does the record show is the actual function of Dr. Carter? What is the actual function at this fair hearing? What has he done? What work has he done? And what is it anticipated he will do? What are the functions? Forget the labels right now. What are the functions? Because don't I have to look at what is he doing, or what is it anticipated that he will do that constitutes the practice of law? Obviously, calling a witness isn't it. Cross-examining a witness isn't it. Closing argument isn't it. So what are the functions that the record that in this case shows that he has done or anticipates doing that constitutes the practice of law?
Well, I have to admit the record's rather skimpy.
That was my concern,
that's,
and
that's
it ties
a problem,
in with the other.
From the get-go, the case went up on some affidavits. Opposition has counted all these details about the authorized practice of law or of all these physicians and attorneys, and there's nothing absolutely in the record on this at all. We have just a handful of affidavits on all of this. And so there is no affidavit on what precisely might be done at a hearing. There is the bylaws, which describe what a physician and or lawyer could do. All I can say is that a physician would not be, to me, you wouldn't hire a physician if you wanted to cross-examine witnesses. They say you can't do it, but you wouldn't want to do a physician. You don't have to have a lawyer or a physician. You can have both if you want to. And there are different types of disciplinary proceedings, and this is to cover the whole universe of that.
I think we're using the labels, but we're not analyzing what is being done or what is anticipated being done. And I'm not sure we can review that here because I don't think we have arguably we don't have an adequate record.
Well, the trial court went off on the statute, 757.302, and he said, I'm looking at that statute, and it says it's the giving of legal advice, the rendering of legal advice outside of courts as well as inside of courts. And so based on that, and the role as defined in the bylaws is that this attorney is only appearing as legal counsel. So his role is at legal counsel, and the definition, he concluded this was an unauthorized practice of law. But there was no evidentiary fleshing out of what legal vice. I mean, to me, when an attorney advises someone of their rights and obligations under the bylaws, under the law, that's the practice of law. Now, whether
in this has that been? Does the record reflect that that has occurred in this action? And does the record reflect that it is anticipated? Is there anything in the record that shows this is what they intend to do?
There is not.
You just take the position, if you come in and you have a JD, LLB or whatever, law degree, that makes you a lawyer, that makes you practicing law, that means you've got to be licensed in Wisconsin to appear at this hearing. I mean, that's the hospital's position, straight out, not knowing anything about what the guy's going to do.
Well, I think there's an assumption, Your Honor,
Is that, that's your position?
Yeah, but there's an assumption.
Right?
Right.
Okay. And the assumption is, if you're a lawyer, somewhere down the line, you're going to say something that looks like legal advice.
And you have
to,
and you have to advise your client on the rights and implications of what is going on in this hearing, and its effect, and the appeal processes, and preserving appeals, and all that. And I submit to you, and a physician can do that. Mm-hmm. A physician can come in and help you on the professional review side of it. That's why you would bring in. In fact, if you wanted some political clout, you'd get the biggest doctor in the hospital, hopefully, to be there to support you in your endeavor. But you wouldn't want that doctor performing a legal role of advising you on your rights and obligations, et cetera, under the, in this fair hearing process.
I had many a client, some doctors, some architects, some engineers, some homemakers, who studied up on their own cases and were very capable of telling me what they thought their rights were, or if it was a spouse's case or a friend's case, what they thought the rights were. And I've had quite a number, I know quite a number of people who are quite adept at the law.
Mm-hmm. But you...
Adept, and not lawyers.
But wouldn't
they
you,
used to frighten me.
Would you be a fool to retain a doctor for legal advice?
Yes, you would under your procedure, because you don't ask the doctor if he's going to give or she's going to give legal advice. You only ask, are you a doctor, and are you with this with Community Health Network? That's the only two questions you ask. You don't say, have you studied law? You don't say, is your avocation law? You don't say, do you watch Judge Judy and know how to do it? I mean, you don't ask any of that questions, as long as it's a staff physician. Right?
Correct.
Because you've made the assumption that the doctor doesn't know how to do it, but that assumption may or may not be correct, especially a physician who's gone through several of these might have a very good idea of how to do it.
Correct, and you could do both. You can have a physician and a lawyer if you thought you needed legal counsel on this under these bylaws.
Are you relying on the contract saying, look, we can be unreasonable. If we want a licensed lawyer in Wisconsin, that's what we get. It doesn't have to be make good sense. We think it does, but it doesn't have to. That's the contract. That's what we want.
No,
we don't have any rights other than that.
To the hospital, this was a reasonable interpretation of the provision, and that at a bare minimum, we would require licensure. Had we merely wanted to exclude this out-of-state of attorney, we wouldn't have taken the position we did. We said, you can be there, you can, as long as you're assisted. So we have someone that's accountable for any ethical violations, any improprieties in the process, et cetera.
Can I go back to my Kenneth Starr hypothetical? I thought I understood that Judge Kloster ruled that he didn't have the authority to grant a motion for pro hac vice for an out-of-state attorney at a hospital fair hearing.
That's correct. But that's different than the hospital saying that if you associate with an attorney, you can appear in our hearing. That the court was saying this isn't a judicial proceeding. I don't think I have jurisdiction. And the pro hac vice situation is one where you have supervision of the attorney. He's an out-of-state attorney, but you have a court there. And even in that case, the attorney associates with the Wisconsin counsel. But you have supervision. This is not before a court, and so the court isn't there to supervise.
But, counsel, if this is the practice of law, which is what you're arguing to us, I don't, and that's, we all agree, regulated by the state. I don't see how, if it is the practice of law, you can permit him to practice law. Aren't you back to Justice Bradley's question? And now you're aiding and abetting an unlicensed attorney that you know is unlicensed to practice law before you just because he's got Wisconsin counsel sitting next to him.
Well, maybe it was a poor interpretation, but we viewed it as an accommodation of Dr. Seitzinger, who would have primarily a Wisconsin counsel who is licensed to practice to associate with an out-of-state counsel. And that is a generally accepted procedure where if you associate with a local counsel for the local law and the like. That's done all the time. So we thought this was a way to accommodate.
It's done all the time extrajudicially?
I don't know that for a fact.
Okay. Because, I mean, you know, everyone is familiar with pro hac vice privileges under which he appears before us today. But I guess I have some concern that if you believe this is the unauthorized practice of law, letting him participate and do exactly what he'd do alone just because he has Wisconsin counsel sitting next to him doesn't make it any less the unauthorized practice of law, does it?
No, we believe that an association with licensed counsel removes that problem.
Counsel? Well, yeah. Based on what?
Pardon?
Based on what?
Because the client there is associated with a licensed counsel who then is getting advice from an out-of-state attorney or getting assistance,
I see.
So you have the licensed attorney there who is practicing law.
Mm-hmm.
So we feel that was an accommodation which would overcome this unauthorized practice of law situation.
So it's like the attorney has hired the out-of-state attorney to assist him as a special expert or something.
Similarly, but I think the client ultimately is the client. Yes.
My hypothetical to opposing counsel, this young lady right here was the most eminent gynecologist in New Jersey. If you had local counsel, could you bring in this eminent gynecologist from New Jersey and permit her to cross-examine?
No, but she could appear as an expert witness, which is typically done in these cases.
Why couldn't she cross-examine?
Because she is not within the category of people pursuant to the contract who are entitled to represent or appear before physicians who are subject to suspension. The contract specifies a member of the staff. I mean, if you were to rewrite the contract, yes, but the contract in this case specifies either a physician on staff or an attorney. So in your hypothetical,
I thought you said in response to Justice Rogensack that an attorney from another state who was not admitted to practice mm-hmm. law here could come in and do those things in association.
In association, under the legal counsel, counsel portion of the two types of people that are allowed to appear at these hearings. The doctor wouldn't be an attorney, couldn't associate as legal counsel. So her only way that she could appear would be via expert witness.
Counsel, two things. Number one, your contract may, or your bylaws may indicate who can appear, but it doesn't pretend to assert what constitutes the practice of law. I mean, you're not that ambitious, are you?
No, I don't see how private parties could contractually establish what the practice law is in the state.
So,
that's for this court.
That's right. So regardless of what you label it, if it's an attorney, if it's a super attorney, if it's attorney with all sorts of degrees, that label in and of itself doesn't mean whether or not that person is practicing law. It smells like, hey, why else would you hire a lawyer? But it doesn't mean, your contract doesn't define what's the practice of law, who's practicing law, does it?
No, it merely says you may retain legal counsel and attorney for the proceeding.
The second thing, SCR, Supreme Court Rule 20.5.5, says unauthorized practice of law. It says a lawyer shall not assist a person who is not a member of the bar in the performance of activity that constitutes the unauthorized practice of law. If you allowed, as Justice Rogensack's hypothetical introduces, local counsel to sit there and have some out-of-state counsel who is not licensed in Wisconsin to conduct the activity, to do the functions that I'm focusing on here today, seems to me that very arguably that lawyer is assisting a person who's not a member of the bar in the performance of an activity that constitutes the unauthorized practice of law.
Well, I can only say that in this state, typically, when we have lawyers who have not passed the bar yet, or we have out-of-state counsel who associate with our firm, under the supervision of a licensed attorney, they can perform various acts without I understand it to be engaged in the unauthorized practice of law, as long as they're under supervision of a licensed attorney. I don't know if that answers your question. We, as a hypothetical, said in this situation, to accommodate Dr. Seitzinger, we'll allow, if it's under the supervision of a licensed attorney, basically, that will allow him to appear, rather than just taking the view, as, which we could have taken the view, as this is the unauthorized practice of law, no doctor, no attorney Kadar at all.
I'm very sympathetic with the difficulty of defining unauthorized practice of law and what is practice of law and what isn't practice of law. We've had cases that raise this issue. As you know, the American Bar Association has attempted to define what is the practice of law, and I think that went down in flames because they couldn't do it. And we have a petition pending before this court, I think you know, that asked the court to appoint a committee to study this very issue. So you are here without the benefit of any committee or any definition that clearly states what is the practice of law. So it is very difficult. Now, in small claims court, the statutes allow non-lawyers to appear for corporations or collection agencies, right?
I think that's correct.
And we've allowed that.
Correct.
When it came to an estate, we said, the personal representative who's not a lawyer can't appear.
Right.
But now we have summary procedures where non-lawyers do appear for estates. That hasn't apparently been challenged. We've got administrative agencies. Attorney Kadar looked at the Interstate Commerce Commission, federal, patent law, federal. But in certain administrative agencies in this state, non-lawyers appear for clients. And a study was done by, I think it was the University of Wisconsin Law School, that showed that non-lawyers who appear, who are very... have had a lot of experience, do better than lawyers who have no experience. Mm-hmm. Although lawyers who have experience and non-lawyers have experience seem to be equally competent. Now, this is not an administrative agency because it's not a state, but it is a private administrative grouping. So if you can have a non-lawyer appear for, and if I've forgotten whether this was workers' comp or unemployment comp, in the state and represent a client, and that's not viewed as the unauthorized practice of law, why would an appearance before this hospital forum be an unauthorized practice of law? I mean, that's what you're really relying on, right?
Yeah, that's correct. The court has carved out exceptions, and as I understand it, given the power of the court, if the legislature were to carve out an exception that this court found improper, you would strike it down. And so the court ultimately has narrowly picked some situations where lay people have often gotten in and performing certain tasks, whether they're real estate brokers, insurance adjusters, and then the legislature did the small claims court, and this court decided that was all right, too. So you've had exceptions. And I think the attempt to write a definition for the practice of law has proven to be impossible because it varies on the character of the services. It varies on the character of the person delivering the services. There are a lot of intermeshed issues here. And so what has happened is the courts have made exceptions. Okay, this is a recognized situation. Lay people are doing it. We're going to make an exception here. The problem I have with this particular request for an exception is, why is this different than any other private dispute and with any other private interaction in Wisconsin? You have the lawyers in Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois. They're all sitting on our borders, and they say, okay, any kind of private dispute, out of court, private dispute, whether it's a business transaction, a business contract, real estate closing, anything like that between private parties, why couldn't one of the parties say, oh, I want an Illinois lawyer to handle this for me? I want an Iowa lawyer to handle this for me. And you're going to say, what's the exception? How do you carve out a private dispute between private parties, which by its very nature does not have judicial supervision. That's the nice thing about pro hoc vici, you have judicial supervision. Here you have, if the idea is to protect the public, how do you protect the public in these private matters if anybody can do it? And to make this type of exception, you're saying, okay, anybody, you're basically saying anybody can practice law in this state if it's private parties and a private dispute.
Well, suppose your private dispute involved selling and buying widgets, and the parties will have a continuing relationship on widgets, and they both want to continue with business with each other. They don't want to come into court on an adversarial proceeding. So they want to set up their own dispute resolution system, and each agrees that John Smith of New York is going to be the decision maker, and that each party can bring in and be represented by whomever they want. If they want a lawyer licensed, okay. If they want an investment banker or an engineer experienced in manufacturing widget, you can do any of that. And everybody has a right to examine witnesses, bring witnesses, cross-examine witnesses, make statements. You think that would be the practice of law and that we should outlaw that as unauthorized?
Well, you're discussing a consensual situation between two parties.
Which this is.
And in a situation where I can't say whether that should be unauthorized practice of law because private parties can't confer the right to practice law in a jurisdiction. I mean, does some of this go on? I'm sure it does. But I know our firm, if there's a matter in another state that has no nexus with Wisconsin, it's, say, Illinois residents, Illinois dispute and all that, we are leery about getting into that dispute because we know that we're not licensed to practice in Illinois. And I know, I suspect a lot of the practicing bar has this in the back of their mind. Even if the clients were to say, you do this, it would be in the back of your mind, and they'd probably come to me because I handle those kinds of things for my firm. And we'd have to wrestle with this issue because there's no clear definition. It's not an easy thing to define.
Could we possibly, there's been a lot of discussion up here on the practice law, decide this simply as a contract interpretation, simply that, look, we're dealing with the bylaws of a hospital. This is a contract between the hospital and this particular doctor, and it's a reasonable interpretation that they adopted without getting into the unauthorized practice of law.
Oh, I think you could. And this court has traditionally been fact-specific if it is going to take an issue like this, because you have rulemaking power to address exceptions. And if you go the way of the ABA with their new model rule 5.5, there's a way to look at this on a more broad basis. So historically, the court has taken a narrow view each time it has addressed one of these exceptions. And in this case, contractually, you could go that way. I do believe, in all fairness, though, that there is not a mootness argument, as I previously testified. I regret putting that footnote in my brief. What I was trying to say is, a practical purpose, he cannot be reinstated. He won't be reinstated because his privileges have been terminated. But I don't think there's a mootness point. But to answer your question, yes.
Well, what about the arguments about the contract, that the contract is plain language? You, as the drafter, can't interpret the contract. It doesn't say licensed in Wisconsin, just as an attorney. That you will construe it strictly and narrowly against the drafter. So, I mean, there are lots of contract arguments that are not in your favor.
Yeah. If you construe it against us, then I think you get into the unauthorized practice of law.
That's right.
If you construe it with us, then I don't see a problem.
But the general rule of contract interpretation, which doesn't mean we have to follow it or apply it in this case, is the one I just stated, which Attorney Cardar stated.
Well, there is no evidence in the record on the intent of the parties right now. That was not fleshed out on the trial court level before I was involved in the case.
And ordinarily it wouldn't be, because you would just look at the language of the contract, unless you could show that you should violate the parole evidence rule and go behind it and find extraneous information.
Mm-hmm. But an argument could be made for an ambiguity which would allow parole evidence based on the fact of the unauthorized practice of law, and one does not normally construe a contract to be contrary to public policy.
We're back to unauthorized practice of law.
Correct. I think I'm done. Any other questions?
I can understand why you want to be done. When I was counsel, I wanted to be done. Thank you, Mr. Kramer. Mr. Connell. I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong case. Mr. Carter, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. The record is indeed sparse, but it's clear enough that the hospital made no accommodations. If the court cares to look at page 156 of plaintiff's appendix, in their brief to the lower court, the hospital argues, quote, defendants have previously told plaintiff and Carter that while the plaintiff may obtain counsel from Carter, Carter will not be permitted to appear on plaintiff's behalf at hearings in Wisconsin unless he's licensed to practice law in this state. So that, let's get the record clear on that point. I think Justice Bradley has raised the crucial issue, if I may say so, and the issue here is it's not what you call something. You can't alter the nature of something by calling it something different. And whether something is a practice of law, and other Supreme Courts have addressed this question, it's whether it requires legal knowledge, legal skills, and some have gone further to say legal knowledge and skills, a point that Justice Abramson broached, that is above that of the average layman. Does it require the judgment of a trained legal mind? Now, all these arguments.
Sir, if I could just interrupt you a minute. I know what the tasks are that occur at the hearing. Am I to understand that if we agree with your argument, you would never be giving any advice privately, publicly, anywise to your client about any of the rights that may attach to his past medical privileges or how they were suspended?
Well, the answer is not any legal advice that's prohibited by the honor. That was my next point I was going to make, that one must remember there are three separate related issues made here. What is prohibited, and why the private arrangements that counsel referred to with Minnesota lawyers and Illinois lawyers, is that they would be passing opinions about Wisconsin law. There is absolutely nothing in about Wisconsin law that can prohibit a citizen from calling up somebody in New Jersey and having a lawyer express opinions in general about the law.
But you're not answering my question.
Well, I am trying to, Your Honor, because...
Just listen to the question, yeah. Okay? The question is, are we to assume that if we agree with your opinion,
yes,
and say you can appear at this hearing, that you will give no legal advice about the bylaws, about how the hearing was conducted privately, in public, or whatever, to your client?
That's correct. I mean, I think...
All you're going to do is present evidence, really more as a physician than as a lawyer, help him cross-examine witnesses, and that's going to be the task. But no advice at all is going to be given by you.
That's correct. I believe that foreign counsel can make general statements about the law, and I don't believe that, for example, the principle that in general a court will not review. And quite frankly, I haven't looked at the Wisconsin statutes to represent Dr. Seitzinger, but I can tell Your Honor that, for example, from a law review article, one can glean that no court will review the privileging decisions of a hospital. I believe that it's not the practice of law to make such a statement to a client because it's not a comment on Wisconsin law. Just as Wisconsin cannot prohibit or enjoin somebody for an attorney from expressing views on federal law, it would, I contend, exceed the authority of the court to silence an attorney, to speak on any general principles law whatsoever. That's why I was trying to answer Your Honor's question. What I was trying to say is that I would not and have not, quite honestly, given specific counsel to Dr. Seitzinger on Wisconsin law. I may have, and probably have, made some general statements that decision will generally not be reviewed by a court, but I don't believe that that is the unauthorized practice of law because that implicates First Amendment rights and so on.
Thank you. Counsel, no. My concern is this. I mean, I can get there legally and conceptually that this is a contract, that the hospital can say who appears, that arguably they said a lawyer can appear. They didn't say has to be licensed to practice. It's a reasonable interpretation, but you dovetail into it's construed against the hospital if it's ambiguous. The question isn't whether it's reasonable. It's whether, it, you know, take that maxim of construction. But, you know, I think that if you're there, you're going to be giving some advice. Now, the record is deficient here, apparently. You assert, and apparently, I don't want to misspeak, the hospital acknowledges the record is deficient. So I can come up with a nice formula that says, okay, the record's deficient. We really don't know what he's going to do, what he did, or it doesn't have anything in the record of what he anticipates doing, so I'll get rid of it. But how do I, in the back of my head and I guess in the front of my face with my nose, I just can't help but think somewhere down the line you're not going to really be advising him on his legal rights.
I'm ready. May I answer?
Okay.
Well, I think one goes back to the venerable Justice Holmes, and what your Honor is doing is applying logic.
I
can tell Your Honor that.
I disagree.
And I can tell Your Honor. I mean, I feel
the law has some logic besides just experience.
Well, all I can tell Your Honor, and I feel uncomfortable testifying because I don't perceive that to be my function. But in a 10-day hearing that goes on to the wee hours of the night from 6 p.m. to 2 p.m., this is entirely a medical discussion. The cross-examination of witnesses is entirely on medical records. And what the law is simply just does never comes up in the middle of a fair hearing. Now, I dare say, what legal opinions one expresses are not about Wisconsin law. And I can honestly say I can't recall expressing anything on Wisconsin law prior to Dr. Seitzinger has since filed a law, so that's a different matter. But as regards the fair hearing, except for general principles of what a court will and will not review, I didn't even know what the statutes were. It's totally superfluous to a representation.
And how about advising him on other questions of law that don't turn on Wisconsin law?
Such as what, Your Honor? I mean,
I don't know. You're always very specific and careful to say that you're not going to advise him on Wisconsin law, which leads me to believe you believe it's open for you to advise him on something else. You are a lawyer.
But you know, this goes back to the question of the nature of the beast. I mean, it's not a legal problem. So the issues of questions of law simply don't arise. I mean, the discussions that go on with a client is not about, it's about why did you do this? What are they saying? Do you have the records? What does the record say? What does the operating room say? You know, why did you do it? What did the uterus weigh? I mean, this is the kind of dialogue that goes on. There's just simply no legal issue. I mean, the physician acting as a counsel summarizes the facts, this is not in the nature of a legal brief. This is a medical review article.
Counselor, I'm not talking about what goes on in the hearing. I'm conversant with that, and you've been very helpful in explaining your position on that. I guess my question to you goes back to other interactions with the doctor who has hired you. And those, all of the interactions are not going to be in front of the hearing.
I understand that in preparation for a hearing, Your Honor, to familiarize oneself with 44 cases, even if one is a physician specializing in that field, is quite an onerous task. And the discussion and the dialogue that goes on from the time that one is retained to the fair hearing is almost exclusively about medical things. And I mean, legal issues simply don't come up. There are no legal questions, there are no contract interpretations in the sense that one usually thinks of a contract dispute, because the hospital simply tells the physician, here is what your rights are and this is what you can do. And
also, it's not, then am I to understand that if there were a challenge to something that went on and there was a complaint that you were practicing law, that whoever complained could ask the physician who hired you about all of your conversations because there would be no attorney-client privilege then between the two of you?
I'm not sure about that. I'd have to think about that. But anyway,
if you're not operating as an attorney, how would it ever be raised?
Well, that question presupposes that everything an attorney does is a practice of law. I mean, so this is simply a policy question, and for this court to make. And as the court said, we use common sense. I mean, this goes on. In fact, as I indicated in the reply to the amicus brief, the defendant's own expert was deposed in connection with Dr. Seitinger's federal claim in June. And he runs a peer review organization, and I asked him how many fair hearings he'd attended. He said dozens. And were parties ever represented by out-of-state counsel? He said all the time.
Yeah, that wasn't my question, but thank you very much. So you're not sure that there wouldn't be an attorney-client privilege here, if I understand you correctly.
Yes, I mean, it's one of those areas of law where they conflict, and I don't know how that pans out, but certainly what applies to the out-of-state counsel applies to the physician on staff.
Well, there wouldn't be a claim there, though, of an attorney-client privilege if you're talking about the physician on staff. There could be a claim of attorney-client privilege, as there sometimes is in litigation that gets contentious, and we draw a bar and protect those confidences.
I appreciate that, but I only raise that point because the hospital has claimed that it would sustain all sorts of injuries if that privilege were waived, but no such privilege would exist with a physician.
But thank you very much.
Thank you, Attorney Cardar. Thank you, Attorney Greer. For your discussion today of 02-2002 Seitzinger versus Community Health Network, and an attempt to make a very difficult area of law more intelligible in this very small subpart of the unauthorized practice of law. So with that, this hearing is closed. The students who should remain, they will be joined by other students, and Justice Prosser will be out in a few moments. We are in recess until 1:45.